Iambic Audiobooks presents Step on a Crack by Mary Anderson, read by Exie Sands. Chapter 1.
Does a person know when they're going crazy? I'd seen lots of pictures of people in asylums who seemed to know where they were and why, and I'd read dozens of books on the subject. When said people actually decide to go crazy, that it's their way of handling problems or not handling them. So they had to know what they were doing, right? I hated to think I was deliberately driving myself nuts, but that morning I wasn't sure what to believe. Don't get me wrong, I didn't spend all my time worrying about things like that. It was only after I'd had the nightmare, and the one the night before had been worse than usual. Maybe it just seemed worse because it had been over 3 months since the last one. I knew exactly because I kept a record. Several of my girlfriends kept calendars, checking off the date they got their period with a large P. But my calendar was different. Mine had a big red N for nightmare. Once, Carolyn Wesley spotted it lying on my desk and began asking questions in her usual obnoxious style.
What are the N's for, Sarah? Naughty?
If only she knew. That's when I started hiding the calendar inside my desk. I couldn't risk mothers finding it. Shortly after that, I'd almost fooled myself into thinking my nightmare had gone for good. But the night before, it had been back, the same as always in every detail. Oh, it wasn't so bad in itself, but I knew what would follow. The other thing, the awful thing I had to do each time I'd had one. I didn't even want to think about it that morning. I should explain. Who I am, I mean. My name's Sarah Carpenter. I'm 15, and I live in New York City. The only child of talented upper-middle-class parents. A product of exclusive private schools and the best of care. Dad's a symphony conductor who travels a lot. Mother used to be a concert pianist, but she gave that up soon after I was born. Judging from her old press clippings, many people thought she had great promise. Then again, others didn't. Anyway, she traded all that for what's referred to as the joys of motherhood. Yes, mother's super at all sorts of things. She cooks beautifully, does all her own housework, embroidery, decorating, and gardening. We've even got a greenhouse on the top floor of our brownstone where she raises rare specimens of exotic plants. When Dad's away on tour, as he was that day, she thinks up special outings for the two of us and plans my favorite meals. We're more like sisters, really. We're so close. It's impossible not to feel loved and protected, knowing mother's around. Why mention all this? Because the recurring nightmare I'd had all my life, the horrid dream that scared me half to death, was about mother. It always started out the same way, on a bright, sunny day. I was me in the dream, but much younger. I was skipping jump rope through the park. I could see Mother walking up ahead, her back toward me. As I skipped along, I was singing the children's rhyme.
Step on a crack, break your mother's back. Step on a line, break your mother's spine.
Softly to myself. Everything seemed normal until suddenly I began skipping faster. When I had almost caught up to Mother, I began to yell. I shouted the words of the song louder and louder.
Step on a crack, break your mother's back.
But she didn't turn around. She never looked at me. She just kept walking even faster. In the distance, I could see a solitary grave emerging from the top of a hillside, jutting down to the water. The grave had a tiny iron fence around it. When Mother approached, the iron bars quickly jumped up from the grave, trapping her inside. She began pounding against them, pleading to be set free. But instead of helping when I heard her cries, I began laughing hysterically, shouting the words of the song even louder. I took my jump rope, snapped it around her waist, and tied her to the bars. I never saw Mother's face, but I heard her let out a terrifying scream. Her body slumped down onto the gravestone, her face buried in a puddle of blood. About to scream out myself, I woke up. As I stared into the darkness, my body soaked in sweat, I knew the dream was finally over. Until the next time. See what I mean about being crazy? I love Mother and always have. She's a super person. We get along just fine and agree on most everything. So why, in my nightmare, did I always kill her? Naturally, I'd kept this to myself, never saying a word to my parents. How could I? By the way, Mom, I think I need psychiatric help. All my life, I've been killing you in my dreams. Impossible, right? But it wasn't just the dream that made me think I was going nuts. It was the other thing that happened afterwards. I had tried stopping it, honestly. Each time I swore I was not going to take anything again. But I couldn't seem to help myself. Suddenly, I'd see some silly necklace or scarf in a store and have to take it. Why fool myself? That afternoon after school, I'd steal again. That would make the dream go away for a while. It was the only thing that did. I didn't want to have to think about it. But don't think I hadn't tried to figure it out, to learn why the dreams only came at certain times. Once, I thought it might be caused by Dad's going on tour so much, but the dates didn't fit. Besides, then I'd be killing him in my nightmare, not Mom. I wrote a letter to a person who analyzes dreams for the newspaper once, but was too scared to send it. I kept thinking I'd forget to stamp it or something. Then it would come back to our house and Mother would open it by mistake. When I was younger, I thought my nightmare might be related to the full moon. They say people act strangely then. Whatever it was, that morning I had the awful feeling that I couldn't handle it much longer. The stealing part was the worst of all, always wondering when it would happen. But that day, I promised myself I would try even harder to resist. After school, I would take the bus straight home. I wouldn't stop anywhere, wouldn't even look at a store. Then it couldn't happen. It mustn't. Going down to breakfast after one of my awful nights always made me feel guilty. Even though Mother knew nothing about my terrible dreams, I did. She's always so bright and cheerful in the morning. It made me feel even worse. One good thing, though, once I'd had the nightmare and done the stealing part, I was all right again for a long time. Actually, I was quite an ordinary person otherwise, really. That morning, Mother was her usual jolly self. She was standing by the sink watering her hanging plants, the morning sunlight catching the gray highlights in her hair, while she hummed softly to herself. Vivaldi, I think. Mother's always humming some classical piece. I used to wonder how she could be so together so early in the day while I was barely able to navigate downstairs. "I'm a day person, hun," she'd explain. "Some folks wind down during the day, others wind up." Mother threw me a glance and smiled. "Morning, Sarah. Eggs are ready. Toast or muffins?" "Muffins," I said, gulping down my orange juice. "All set for the last day of school?" she asked, popping one in the toaster. "Guess so," I said, noticing a tiny gift-wrapped package by my plate. "What's this?"
"It's for your teacher, Miss Sedgwick. She admired my needlepoint watchband at the last school meeting, so I made her one like it. I thought it'd be a nice year-end gift. Don't forget to take it."
"Hey, why don't I stay home today and help with packing? The last day of school is always such a crock." This was true enough, but it wasn't the real reason I wanted to stay home. If I didn't go out, I couldn't possibly be tempted to go into a store and steal something. Mother laughed and poured herself some tea.
"Thanks, but no thanks. Both you and your father are hopeless packers. Even Richard finally admitted it when he called last night."
"Dad called from Europe? When?"
"After you'd gone to bed," she explained. "He wanted to know why his yachting cap was packed with his dress suit and two pink shirts. At first, he denied packing them himself, but I wore him down."
She shook her head and giggled.
"Remember last year when we left for Fire Island? You guys packed tons of sheets and not one pillowcase. We used laundry bags for a week."
"Okay," I admitted. "We're not the greatest, so you be the major domo. Make a checklist, then I'll assemble and pack."
"There's no rush," she said. "We've got plenty of time before we leave. Some special reason why you don't want to go to school?"
Of course not, I said lightly. Mother gave me a quizzical glance.
Not worried about your report card, are you? You seem fidgety. Did you sleep all right?
Sure, swell. I smiled feebly. I slept great, and my grades are good, so don't worry. Mother nodded and sipped her tea.
Look, Sarah,
she added, browsing through mail and papers on the table.
I clipped this out yesterday. Lord and Taylor has a great sale on summer things. This pantsuit would look perfect on you, in green, maybe? Let's stop in this afternoon. You'll need a new bathing suit, too, and sneakers.
I glanced at the ad. Mother and I always have a super shopping spree before leaving the city. We tour the Fifth Avenue stores, buying our summer outfits. Funny, somehow whatever Mother buys always looks like what she's already got. Quiet, conservative, and classy. Well, I could use a new bathing suit, but could I face the temptation of Lord and Taylor? What if I actually stole something while Mother was along? No, I'd never risk it.
Maybe,
I hedged. But I might stop by Carolyn's house instead. She's got a new stereo she wants to show off. I leafed through the mail, picking up a postcard. Another note from Aunt Kat? I asked.
No, that came yesterday, she said. Don't you remember?
I read the message quickly scrawled on the back of a picture of Buckingham Palace. All's well in foggy London town. Regards to all, Katrin. You're right, I recalled. I saw it, but all Aunt Kat's postcards sound the same. Doesn't she ever write letters?
Never, said Mother. Too busy flitting around the globe, I guess. That's her gypsy blood. Mama loved to tell the story of some ancestor back in Sweden. When he returned from fighting Peter the Great, he had a wild gypsy girl he'd taken for his bride strapped to his saddle. I'm sure Katrin could be considered a direct descendant.
Aunt Kat is Mother's younger sister. She's an artist who's been living out of a suitcase since before I was born. She only stays long enough in one place to create a painting, sell it, then spend the money traveling somewhere else. A real gypsy. We have postcards from all over the world. Love to all. Take care of the family. Having a grand time. Junk like that. When I was little, I'd asked a lot of questions about her. Those notes from exotic places had made her seem almost magical.
You're in Ceylon. Next stop, Kathmandu. Regards to all.
Occasionally, there'd be a little package for me. A doll from Sweden. A toy whistle from Yugoslavia. Nothing fancy. I'd stuff them all away in a drawer somewhere. But whenever I'd asked Mother to give me details about Katrin, she'd never been too informative.
There's not much to tell, she'd say with a funny expression. I was the homebody type, the nest builder. But Katrin always had a wanderlust. Art and travel have been her life. She always said she never wanted to be tied to any place or anything.
Frankly, Katrin seemed like a rather selfish, rootless person to me. Mother took the postcard, slipping it into her pocket.
I'll pack it away with the others in the storeroom.
Downstairs, Mother has an old trunk where she keeps all correspondence in neat packages. There are old letters from her parents in Iowa, congratulatory telegrams on concerts, friends' birth announcements, piles of postcards from Katrin, plus lots of love notes from Dad. Those are in a special box with a key. Hot stuff, I guess. Why save all those? I asked. Love letters are one thing, but those dumb notes from Aunt Kat say nothing.
I know, she smiled. Just a habit. They might be fun to look through someday, especially since you're not likely to meet her. Katrin swore she'd never return to the States. She felt Americans knew nothing about art or artists. Anyway, she shrugged. Notes and letters are like photographs, Sarah. Little pieces of people. I can't just chuck them out.
They've got a name for people like you, I said. Pack rats. Mother screwed up her nose.
For you, too, she added. Sassy. Better start moving or you'll be late.
Sure you don't need help with packing?
Run along. I'll be fine. Mrs. Efficiency, you know me. Wait, don't forget Miss Sedgwick's gift.
Hoping she'll make me teacher's pet? I asked, getting up.
Thankless child,
she teased, smacking me on the fanny.
Begone.
She shook her head and smiled.
As she cleared away the breakfast dishes, she began humming Vivaldi again. When I reached the front door, I stopped, a sudden wave of apprehension shooting through me. Should I insist on staying home? Pretend I was sick? If I could keep from stealing just once, the connecting chain between my nightmare and the thefts might be broken. I glanced back toward the kitchen.
Forget something?
Asked Mother.
No, nothing,
I said. See you after school.